I'm Frank Vaughn. It's April 6th, 2026. People are always asking me, why Iran? Why are you spending so much time covering this conflict? Why don't you talk about other things? Why don't you talk about Canadian support of the Ukrainian war effort? $25.2 billion off the top of my head is how much money and arms we have dedicated to the Ukrainian war effort, a losing war effort that is more and more dependent on this forced mobilization. I've made plenty of videos about this showing how the Ukrainians are kidnapping men off the streets, sending them to the front lines where they die. They're brave. They fight bravely. I've talked about how much money and treasure and how our own military has been denuded in support of this war effort. I've talked about how the Carney government and the previous Trudeau government were talking about taking the firearms that they were stealing from legal, lawful gun owners and sending them over to Ukraine. But the Zelensky regime is so flush with cash and weapons that they said, no, we don't want those guns. We want nice, high-quality guns. We want the hundreds of millions of dollars. We want the fancy stuff. No thank you, sir. I've talked about this plenty. There is no more important story for Canadians right now than the Iranian war. You may think you're not involved, but you are. The entire world is involved in this thing. And much that I would like to see change in Canada, much that I would like to see come to fruition when it comes to the pressure towards Western independence depends on a stable United States that is focused on North America and focused on some of the great things that the Trumpian domestic agenda was bringing to the table. The Iranian war threatens to derail all of that, which is why I talk about it, and I'm going to talk about it briefly today again. Now, I want to begin with a brief review of the facts when it comes to this so-called rescue operation. I'm going to speculate at the end, but let's review the facts first. This is a great thread which brings it all together. This is the official story as it comes out of the U.S. government, out of the Trump administration. So if I got that right, here's the narrative. A U.S. F-15 fighter jet got shot down over Iran despite Trump saying 2 days beforehand in his nationwide address that Iran has no aircraft, anti-aircraft equipment, and the radar is 100% annihilated. We should be able to dispense with that if we are honest. However, there's a lot of people who are not honest and can't dispense with that and don't seem to see that over a dozen aircraft in 2 days getting damaged or shot down doesn't indicate to them that Iran has significant air defense capabilities left. The plane's weapons system officer, a highly respected colonel, according to Trump, ejected from the plane and got seriously wounded. Still, according to Trump, that's what he said. He still managed to hike up a 7,000-foot mountain, 2.1 kilometers up, upwards in elevation, and hide in a ridgeline in a crevice in the Zagros Mountains despite those very serious wounds. U.S. MQ-9 Reaper drones started killing all Iranian military-age, just males, no one else, believed to be a threat who got within 3 kilometers of the American's location. To retrieve him, the U.S. managed to seize an abandoned airport 200 miles deep inside Iran near Isfahan, which is a nuclear facility which is speculated to be a place where deep underground they're hiding that enriched uranium. We'll get to that. Which happens to be where Iran's largest atomic scientific center is located. They landed 2 MC-130 military transport planes in that airport in an operation involving hundreds of special forces troops and military personnel. Hundreds is a big number. Both MC-130 planes got stuck in the sand, not mud. Some people are speculating mud. It's very dry. And the U.S. destroyed them themselves to prevent them from falling into Iranian hands. That's the story. They deployed 3 new aircraft to extract all U.S. personnel on the ground. And there's links to all of this. You can see it on screen. For those of you listening, there's links to every single one of these things listed. There are videos circulating online of heavy clashes with presumably Iranian missiles raining down on the county in the Zagros Mountains during the night. So a heavy battle. Iran sent pictures of the aftermath at the abandoned airport, and it's a site of utter destruction with U.S. planes and MH-9 helicopter parts scattered all over the ground, still smoking. Iran claims they are the ones who, in fact, destroyed all the aircraft, whereas the U.S. says they blew them up themselves. Meanwhile, a second U.S. plane, an A-10 Warthog, also crashed on Friday near the Strait of Hormuz. In that instance, the pilot was rescued safely. In all of this, after multiple planes and helicopters destroyed or shot down, the documented heavy clashes, the hundreds of special forces troops and military personnel operating deep inside Iran, not a single U.S. soldier was reported killed or even wounded. We haven't had a casualty update in some time. And the highly respected colonel, this was all for, no name, no photo, no interview. Nobody has spoken to him. nor knows who he is. So to sum it all up, anti-aircraft equipment that supposedly didn't exist shot down an F-15 and apparently an A-10 Warthog the same day. A seriously wounded man climbed a 2.1-kilometer mountain. The U.S. seized an airfield 200 miles deep inside a country it's at war with, next to one of its most strategic nuclear sites, and deployed hundreds of troops, all apparently unimpeded. Lost two planes to sand and destroyed their own helicopters. Videos show heavy clashes, missiles raining down, but not a single person got wounded. And the man at the center of it all, nobody knows who he is, completely anonymous, zero pictures, but Trump says he's safe and sound. And so the rescued A-10 Warthog pilot, who also remains anonymous, Trump concludes this all proves the U.S. has achieved overwhelming air dominance and superiority over Iranian skies. Now, if you believe that, I've got oceanfront real estate for sale in Saskatchewan at bottom basement prices. It's on sale right now. The other thing that I would speculate, and I think there's value to this, is that this whole pilot rescue narrative, which may be based in truth, but you see, the best propaganda, the best narratives blend truth or use truth as a cover to hide something else. What if these hundreds of U.S. troops, what if all of these resources were deployed in an attempt to seize the enriched uranium if they think it's at Isfahan? And the operation came under such significant resistance and fire that they had to abandon the entire thing. And so they're using the rescue of the pilot as a story to feed red meat for the masses, red meat for the Republican base, to cover over the fact that they failed in their first attempt at a special forces operation to deploy some of those units, aspects of those units, special forces units, to do this job of getting at this enriched uranium. Now, that is pure speculation. But at this point, what incentive do I have to believe everything that comes out of the Trump administration? We had a 48-hour timeline, ultimatum, which extended into 5 days, which became 10 days. Then we had the United States begging the Iranians for a 48-hour ceasefire. They rejected it. Then there was another 48-hour timeline. Now it's Tuesday, before all hell breaks loose in Iran. They're waffling all over the place. The United States has said, the Trump administration has said, CENTCOM has said that they have overwhelming air superiority, and the Iranians have no defensive capabilities left, and yet they're losing planes and assets left, right, and center. We're told that they have no ballistic missile launchers left. We're told they have no ballistic manufacturing capability left, and yet every single day, Iran is firing ballistic missiles at nations all over the Middle East, not just once a day, multiple times per day. It was only recently, a few days ago, that they fired one of their biggest salvos. During Trump's Wednesday night speech, they fired one of the biggest salvos since the start of the war. Iran seems to still be combat effective, and that's not even taking into account their ground forces, numbering some 1 million men. And I've made this point on my channel before, that they are a guerrilla army with a nation state behind them. This isn't a top-down chain of command. So you see all of these flashy headlines. One headline this morning was that they successfully assassinated one of the IRGC commanders, the head of their undercover wing intelligence operations. The IRGC and the Iranian military is organized in a decentralized way into separate units. It's layered, and it's decentralized around the provinces. So you can't kill the head of the snake, because by design, there is no head of the snake. You can take out as many commanders as you want. The regional commanders have far more effective power over the troops at their disposal. They haven't even entered the fray yet. If ground forces go into Iran, the IRGC will enter the fray on the ground, and I think it will be a disaster. And this may have been a disaster that has been covered up. Now, I know it's speculation, but what is not speculation is that this does not constitute a story of overwhelming air superiority and total control. You can't lose. Believe your eyes. Open your eyes. Open your mind and understand that you can't lose this bad. You can't lose this many assets and claim you have full and complete control. It just doesn't make sense. I am incapable for any cause, politician, or religion, or anything, of saying that 2 + 2 = 5. It's impossible for me. It should be impossible for you, and I hope it is. Now, remember when I covered on this channel, and many of you unsubscribed, the fact that the Iranian protests were not organic at all, that there was a component that was contrived by Mossad and the CIA, And you said I was crazy that the Iranian people inside of Iran, not the expats, the expats absolutely want regime change. These descendants of those who benefited from the Shah, even though people seem to forget how bad the Shah's regime was. A lot of people try to talk about history, but they demonstrate their ignorance whenever they do, not understanding that the uprising that overthrew the Shah was completely and totally popular. Millions of people came out in the street to support the return of Khomeini when he came back and the revolution happened. Look, I'm not saying that Iran is perfect as the, and pure as the driven snow. I'm saying that we forget the nuances of history. The Shah is not remembered fondly by the vast majority of Iranian citizens that were alive at the time to see the overthrow. Age and attrition is taking them out. But their kids, the people who left the country and the children of those expats remember things very differently. They have rose-colored glasses. I was talking to an individual just yesterday who was referring to their barber, who's a 30-year-old descendant of Iranians who left during the time. And of course, they want a revolution. But they live in Canada. They made a career in Canada. They own property in Canada. They're doing very well for themselves. They're not on the ground in Iran where the people are unified behind their government in a way they probably couldn't have been until the Israelis and the Americans started dropping bombs all over the place. But anyway, back to this so-called organic protest. U.S. sent a lot of arms to Iranian protesters. It's Russian television. How dare you, Frank, talk about Russian television, those evil Russians. But they're just quoting Donald Trump. The U.S. sent a lot of weapons to Iranian protesters during the unrest in January. President Donald Trump has told Fox News. So once again, it's not that I was right. It's that the facts speak, and I'm trying to speak the facts. Those protests were not organic. And one of the speculations I highlighted in yesterday's video is that the CIA and Mossad may have shot a lot of those protesters to create a pretext. Don't think they won't do this. It's what they engage in. Creating, manufacturing consent. That's what happens. I'm not saying it did happen, but we know for a fact from the words of the president himself that CIA and Mossad were involved, and they sent weapons, and Kurdish intermediaries allegedly withheld the weapons instead of attempting to facilitate regime change in Tehran. Why would the Kurds do that? Because the Kurds have been betrayed multiple times by U.S. foreign policy. Every time they get involved, they got involved in Iraq, they got involved in Syria, and they end up getting slaughtered because the Americans abandon them as soon as their utility has expired. So maybe third time, they're a little bit shy about getting directly involved because of the ramifications. Maybe they're sick of the betrayal. This is the reality of U.S. foreign policy from their perspective. I don't have a lot of time today, so I'm just going to go through some headlines with you. Attack the Jews. Syrians chant jihad against Israel in mass protests. Videos show protesters across Syria voicing support for Hamas and calling for attacks on Israel, with some officials seen joining the rallies. The Americans have empowered a former ISIS man, a man that the United States put a bounty on his head. If you killed him and you could produce proof that you killed him, the U.S. would pay you. They went from that, this is Jelani, to inviting him to the White House. They put a suit on him, they gave him a Patek watch, and they tried to rehabilitate him, but he's an ISIS man. He is the very definition of an Islamic radical. Donald Trump this morning shared a video which showed the Mall of America in Minnesota filled with people wearing burqas and clearly indicating his outrage with that state of affairs. He's apparently doubling down on this idea of evicting all Muslims from the United States as a domestic issue heading into the election. At the same time, Assad was taken out and an ISIS man was installed as Syria's leader. And now officials in his government are joining protests against Israel. Is this another front that is about to open up in this war? The Israeli forces are already stretched fairly thin. They're fighting on multiple fronts. You've got the settler violence in the West Bank, and now you have Syria agitating, the people agitating and demanding violent action against the Israelis. I'm supposed to believe the situation's under control. I'm supposed to believe that the disaster that I just highlighted at the beginning of this video is a symbol and sign of the impending victory of American forces. As the United States makes demands on the Iranians, as the United States seeks a 45-day ceasefire, which the Iranians are saying no to, because a 45-day ceasefire only allows the United States and Israel to gather their forces and reorganize so that they can attack again. That's the Iranian perspective, because they've been attacked now twice under a flag of truce. A ceasefire does not benefit the Iranians. They want a permanent end of the war. They want security guarantees. They want reparations, and they want control of the strait. And I don't think the United States can agree to any of those terms. But the facts dictate that the Iranians have the leverage at this point. I suppose it could change if Donald Trump makes good on his promise to bomb them back into the Stone Age. I suppose the idea of leverage could change. But at the moment, the Iranians are controlling the ball and they're controlling the field. The United States can drop bombs all they want. They don't have control, and they have no capacity to eliminate the Iranian regime. If they did, they would have done it already. Here's a headline. Iran's new regime looks much the same, only harsher, because you've killed the moderates and now you've got nothing but hardliners left. Inside the Pentagon, fears of a disrupted war effort after Army Chief's ouster. So right around the same time that all of these failures were happening, planes getting shot down, rescue operations, supposed rescue operations, I don't know what they might be covering up with that story. This is where this idea comes from for me, that there might have been an attempted special forces operation to seize the uranium that failed, because that operation would have been in planning, in the advanced stages of planning, at the time that Hegseth began the house cleaning, if you want to call it that, within the U.S. military, firing generals who may have said, there's no way we should do this, it's going to end in disaster. And it very well may have ended in disaster. I don't know, I'm speculating on that point, but all of these things kind of come together in one big marriage of coincidence that may show that a disastrous plan was executed and it ended in disaster predictably, and we're being gaslit and lied to about how disastrous the whole thing was. Meanwhile, downed U.S. drone appears on TikTok Live as Iraqi children try to sell it. This is another U.S. asset that is not operating unimpeded, not over Iran. It's getting shot down over Iraq. Remember, some of these planes that have been damaged, some of these fighter jets that have been damaged, weren't shot down over Iran or damaged over Iran. They were damaged in Iraq. Damaged on the ground in Iraq. Damaged on the ground across the entire region, as Iran seems to be capable of making hits on U.S. air assets in the region. I don't know why people are in denial of this stuff at the same time. America dependent on Chinese electrical parts for AI buildout. Any war effort that the Americans engage in, I would argue, any power projection overseas should have been tempered by the clear reality that the United States needed to wait at least some time to secure their own supply chains. Remember, a Tomahawk missile requires something like 30 pounds of silver. It's some ridiculous amount. And the United States does not refine enough silver. They're dependent on China for that refined silver. The United States produces some silver. They get some silver from Canada. Mexico produces, the most silver in the world. But they all ship concentrate to China to get it refined down to material that can actually be used in these high-tech components. And the Chinese have essentially introduced export controls, so there's no guarantee that the United States can get it. This is in addition to rare earth minerals. This is in addition to the dependence on Chinese electrical parts and Chinese goods, because the United States has outsourced its manufacturing capacity for decades. And Trump has rightly identified that as a critical security concern, and they need to reshore manufacturing. That's what tariffs were all about. I think the launching of this war was premature from a strategic standpoint. This is the hearts and minds angle, how the U.S. and Israel are waging war on Iran's medicines and vaccines. The Pasteur Institute of Iran is one of several healthcare facilities in their country that has been bombed and targeted. They're eliminating their capacity to produce medicine. They're eliminating their capacity to offer healthcare. They're bombing hospitals, folks. They're bombing schools. They're bombing historical sites. They're bombing universities. They're committing war crimes all over the place. And for some reason, American morality, or the morality of the MAGA base, just seems to have evaporated. This idea that foreign wars were unjust, that killing people in foreign lands unnecessarily and targeting civilians were bad. This is what Trump told you. This is what Trump campaigned on. This is what was his bread and butter in 2016 when he was going before those Republican debates and he was getting booed because he was telling the truth about the Bushes and he was telling the truth about American imperialism. This is the guy you supported. And now it's clear that many people are just in a cult of personality, the Trump cult syndrome. They're falling victim to this hero worship of this man, not the ideas. I would make the argument, and have made the argument, at great personal cost, that Trump's domestic agenda was very smart and Canada would be wise to align with it. I've made that argument. This whole effort, this whole war, threatens to throw that entire thing into disarray. This from TFI Global. How Iran shot down multiple U.S. aircraft within 24 hours. Role of infrared tech and the truth about Russia's S-500 in Iran. You go through this article and it's just confirming what I've said all along, is that Iran maintains a lot of technical capacity. They knew the U.S. and Israel would come in with overwhelming air power, that they had all kinds of standoff munitions. They have watched those militaries in operation and know them very well, and they have designed their defense doctrine to counter that threat. Part of that is sitting back and taking the damage on the surface while you retain your assets for the inevitable push to non-standoff weapons, to more direct conflict, to ground troops, to planes that are flying lower, to the transport aircraft. They're sitting on reserves of weaponry, just waiting for the Americans to try and land. And they have advanced weaponry. They have advanced systems. We know that they've been deployed. The bottom of this article is U.S. air superiority being challenged. For decades, the United States has operated under the assumption of air superiority, the ability to control and dominate airspace during conflict. However, these recent developments raise questions about whether that dominance is being challenged. It doesn't raise questions. It shows that dominance is being challenged. And I want to tell you, this article from the National Interest is all related, folks. North Korea's secret weapon, underground air bases. Our enemies are adapting. Western enemies. This isn't just a U.S. problem. What militaries there are still in Europe, the military of the United States, is not adapting as quickly as the militaries of the adversaries are adapting. You look at China and you look at how advanced they are when it comes to drone warfare. Drone warfare is the future. If it wasn't the future, it wouldn't be the chief principal deployed method of warfare in Ukraine right now. You're seeing in Iran, in this Iran theater, how effective ballistics and drones are. The age of tanks and APCs and big expensive aircraft carriers has passed. And that's what the United States has a lot of. There's a reason those aircraft carriers aren't getting closer to Iran, and it's because they're sitting ducks. I've warned about this for years. Meanwhile, North Korea is building these underground bases. They're sharing technology. You know the North Koreans. North Korea, backwards North Korea. These backwards people. Rocket Man, who has ICBMs. It's the only reason he's left alone. He's got nuclear weapons because he was smart enough to pursue them. Now he's protected. But they also have some of the most advanced underground boring technology in the world. Probably the most advanced, but I don't want to go too far in my statement. I've done a lot of reading about this. The North Koreans aren't exactly backwards in some of these technical capacities. They built entire air bases and runways underground, anticipating that their planes would take off from topside airfields and they would land underground because they know those airfields would be destroyed. So they're betting that they would be able to get their assets deployed and in the air and be able to conduct strikes, and then they would land underground to be reloaded and redeployed from those underground bases. It's fascinating stuff for anybody that wants to read about it. But meanwhile, White House deletes bonkers Trump Easter event where he got compared to Jesus. They're comparing him to Jesus. They're invoking the name of the Father and the name of Christ to visit destruction and death on women and children all over Iran and Lebanon, ostensibly, because the Americans support that, even if they're not directly participating in it. This is blasphemy. It's apostasy. This has nothing to do with Jesus. I don't know what this is. Maybe this is Baal and Moloch worship after all, but it is absolutely not in any way Christian. The headline on screen: a new security paradigm is emerging in Asia. China and Vietnam are testing a new format of cooperation, building a more complete partnership for changing Asia. We have BRICS. We have their ships getting and securing passage through the Strait of Hormuz. We have a shifting alliance. We have China getting more and more of their energy resources from the Russians. We have China making inroads into Africa. We have all of these nations, including European nations. Somewhere up here is the article, which highlights Italy denying use of Sicily airbases to U.S. planes carrying weapons of war. The Europeans, France, many Gulf countries, many Asian countries are bypassing the United States entirely, and they're making direct negotiated settlements over the Strait of Hormuz and the passage of their tankers with Iran itself. This is the warning that I'm trying to sound, is that U.S. influence is on the wane. This Iran operation was a big mistake. America is getting weaker, not stronger. And that's the reality of the situation. Meanwhile, domestically at home, the headline is, he's lied to us about everything. Iran war puts Trump on shaky ground with young MAGA men. Now, it's not just MAGA men, it's the independents. A lot of the independent vote went to Donald Trump because he promised to avoid this very situation. He promised to avoid war. This was really important to a lot of people. So every day this goes on, every day it gets escalatory. Every day that Trump makes more unhinged tweets, sure, there's always going to be a very loud vocal component of his base. You can see them in my comment section, who love every word of it. But they are not going to win elections. Independents win elections in the United States, and he's lost, by most counts, 2/3 to 3/4 of them over this war operation. Sending in ground troops will only make it worse. Hitting Iran harder and trying to force their hand, bombing their civilian infrastructure, which will likely lead to the entire region being destroyed, and no oil coming out of the region for years, because it will take longer than the global economy has, let's just leave it at that, much longer, to repair the damage done. It's very easy to destroy things. It's much harder to rebuild them. And the global economy will suffer, and America will not be immune. They might be able to sell more oil. They might be able to sell more jet fuel. They might be able to sell more diesel that they refine. But they don't have enough to satisfy the demand. The famine that I talked about, because of the delay in fertilizer sales, the deeper into April we go, the worse that crisis is going to get come fall and winter. Looking out more than 6 months, right around the time the midterms are happening, this damage, which is already baked in, will be coming to fruition in the world. This isn't dooming. This isn't doomer stuff. This isn't like preying on destruction or being overly pessimistic. It's just reality. It's geopolitics. It's the reality of material and commodities. These problems are already baked in. My fear is that the only thing the Trump administration is going to listen to is direct pressure from its awakening MAGA base. Headwinds. The best way that you can help a friend, and I don't include myself as an enemy of MAGA. I don't include myself as an enemy of Trump. I've said many favorable things on this channel for anybody that's been watching for a long enough time. I've said a lot of favorable things about what MAGA brings to the table. But as a true friend to the movement, a true friend to some of those ideas, not the man, your job right now is to communicate the truth of the matter, which is what I'm trying to do. This whole thing is an unmitigated disaster. And if we don't get vocal about it, we don't get loud about it, it's going to be a disaster that unfolds over years. And all of the promise of America first, secure elections for the United States, secure borders, the help that Canada, you want to talk about Canada, the help that we receive, not just in terms of the trade surplus that we benefit from and negotiations for the world's greatest trade agreement and trade arrangement and trade relationship that you could ever have because of the proximity of the two nations. We need to get that done. We benefit from America getting tough on fentanyl and hard drugs and on the cartels. Those are all good things for Canada. It puts pressure on our government to stop allowing this nation to be a clearinghouse for those cartels and for those triads, to stop Canada from becoming a thrall of the communist Chinese. We need a strong America focused on domestic policy at this time, more than we need an America bogged down in another war in the Middle East on behalf of Israeli foreign policy. We need that here in Canada more than we need probably anything else from our government. We need that pressure. And every single day that this goes on, our position's weakened because the American position is weakened. Because, I mean, what more can I possibly say about it? I'm going to keep trying to communicate the truth. And if people don't like it, that's tough. I hope you come back eventually. You can say all the abusive things you want. You can call me an idiot. What are you doing? All those people on X in particular who are telling me what a stupid retard I am, every single day. Why are you following me? You all follow me. Who's more the fool or the fool who follows him? If I'm that stupid, get away from me. Go away. I don't need you. I will not be captured by an audience. I want to be captured by one thing, and that's the pursuit of the truth, and that's all I'm going to do. Frank Vaughn, I'll see you in the next one. If you like the work, please consider supporting it as I nuke my own prospects. See you later.